everyone, and welcome to Minute 76 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Brian Lockhart of Hamilton Shot by Shot. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
Well, you did such a fine job the last two seasons. I figured I'd bring you back a little bit, you know, We'll see what you have to say today about burning cars and
toast,
and toast, and axes and C4 plastic explosives or something like that. Maybe maybe you have some sort of anecdote about that type of thing. Also, who knows?
Who knows? We'll find out.
We'll have to wait and see. Exactly. So, minute 76 begins with a massive explosion that envelops the RV and ends with a shot of C4 plastic explosives. So we ended things on Friday with Hans giving the order to shoot the RV. So Alexander and James, put in their little missile in their I don't even know what type of. Were you able to recognize the weapon they used there?
No,
is that really supposed didn't. To? Be, is it like supposed to be like a Stinger or something like that?
Yeah, I figured it was a Stinger missile, but with like a stationary, base. You know.
Yeah, I mean they put it together really coolly. There's no question about that. But still, the idea is that we'll talk a little bit about it a little later in this minute. But I have a problem with the angle that they shoot it at. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So basically, Alexander shoots at the RV on Friday and he has a direct hit. And today we start off with a shot of the RV on fire, which it's really cool to see how they did it. The way that explosion. I mean, there's a lot of pyrotechnics that they're using here for this one. No question about that.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, We get a shot of Theo, who is overly excited about everything going on, and he screams, "Oh my God, the quarterback is toast."
Classic line of this movie for sure.
Definitely, for sure. I actually wanted to see if that's ever been used elsewhere. So obviously when I did a search, it kept coming up Die Hard, no question about that. That's the right. that was the number 1 through probably 50 hits. Of looking for that phrase, but I actually found another one, and it actually says that the quarterback is toast is a term for a leader or politician that gets caught in a situation and is forced to resign or retire. Mm. Okay, and they give an example here. They say after the city's police chief's extramarital affairs just got exposed to the public, he was forced to resign due to pressure from the citizens of the city. A talk radio host proclaimed, "Oh my God, their quarterback is toast." So personally, I think that is probably, I don't know when that quote is from, but it probably means that the talk radio guy has seen Die Hard. I think there's more of a chance.
Yeah, if he just said the quarterback is toast, fine. But in fact, if he said, "Oh my God," and then the quarterback is toast, yes, that was a direct quote from Die Hard. My guess is it was, I mean, without researching it, I always just assumed that you might have heard somebody say that during Monday Night Football or, the Super Bowl at some point. I would imagine that just if the quarterback gets sacked, I always just assumed that's what he meant. He's doing the play-by-play.
Yeah. Well, as we mentioned numerous times, Theo likes to use sports analogies. Mm-hmm. Right before they shoot the guard at the beginning, he starts talking about the Lakers, and there's another point in the movie where he talks about something that's he uses a sports analogy. I can't remember offhand right now what it is, but obviously there's this one too. Right. So. All right, he's a sports guy. He's a sports geek, I guess you can say. Do you think this was ad-libbed by Clarence Gilliard, or do you think this is in the script?
I think it's in the script.
All right, well, you're going to have to wait, like everyone else, to the end of this episode to find out if it's in the script or if it isn't. All right. Who knows? Yeah. So at this point, we get another – then we get the shot moves – for us to see the SWAT commander again, and you hear him say, all right. And right next to him, we have our good friend, Dwayne T. Robinson, that goes, get him out of the car. Let's go. And then do you think he's trying to help here? Or do you think, what do you think Robinson's motivations are here? Do you think he really wants to help the guys who are apparently burning in the car? Or is he just doing it for political gain?
No, I kind of get the impression he does care about the men. I do think he is he's aware of the optics of everything that's going on, for sure. But I did get the impression that this is my overall impression of him. He was concerned about the guys. He wants somebody to go get them. He will not be the one to run into the fire to go get them.
Right.
He's scared. That's how I took his character.
Right. He doesn't want to necessarily go into the fire, but he's willing to send other people to take him out.
Correct. Yes.
You know, as you and I both know, one of the things that they teach you in the military is the best leader is a leader that you can follow by example. And Dwayne T. Robinson is not one of those.
Yes, there's
no question about that. He's likes sitting on the sidelines. Go back to those sports analogies here. And at this point, the SWAT commander talks into his radio and goes, "Hang on, Rivers. That's an order." They're not going to go in. That's the idea here. And then
which was the right call. It ends up being the right call.
Yeah. Again, in certain military situations, which you can consider this a military situation, you don't always, not every situation is a Saving Private Ryan situation, where the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many. As Spock said it, perfectly.
Right.
That it works the other way around, and getting Rivers and Rodriguez out. That's not top priority right now. And then we get a shot of Hans, who is quite calm, and he takes his radio and he goes, "Hit it again."
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, we get a shot again of McClane, who wants to join in, and he's trying to stop things. I mean, I find it funny that they're having this conversation on an open line with everyone. There's a lot of times where we'll mention a few times this week where there's certain conversations which obviously you prefer not to have in public, but they're still having them in public.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Hans just change the radio frequency that they're using?
I think he wanted them to know, hit it again. He knows that, hey, we did this and we got more where that came from. I think that was purposeful to prove a point.
No, obviously it was to prove a point. The question was, is he trying to prove the point to the police?
Yes.
Because we sort of figure out that they only have, two or three missiles. They don't have that many missiles here.
But if they do,
or at least what we saw.
Right. What we see. But if he says hit it again, and then he hits him even like three hits, right? Total.
We only see two hits.
All right. So at that point though, the cops don't know if they have any more,
right.
Even if he wasted all of them right then and there, they don't know that. And they're definitely going to be too afraid to go in the way they attempted this time.
Right.
Direct assault. So
correct.
They're overpowered. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah. This whole plot that Hans has figured out is a ploy. It's not real. So for him to, this is, I guess you could sort of say it's a placebo. They're trying to make them think other things than what's really going on. That's what it comes down to in the bottom line. So you're right. Even if they use up all their missiles right away, who cares? No one on the outside knows that they've used up their missiles.
Right.
So, okay. I can understand that. And then McClane screams into the radio, "Hans, you motherfucker. You made your point. Let him pull back." And you could see Hans. Now, Alan Rickman does a great job throughout this entire movie where he doesn't show any emotion in anything that he does, but you can get a sense by his response right now that he's getting a little annoyed with McClane.
Yes.
And that he's getting a little bit more bloodthirsty.
There are some times as the movie goes on, and probably even this week, that you could tell, like you said, his frustration, his annoyance, and he's running out of patience. So
yeah,
he is, calm, cool, collected most of the times, but some of this frustration does start to show here, and and I think it starts here because of what's going on,
right.
But I think as the movie goes on, you'll see that he's not always as cool. The plan's still the plan, and he's still doing the plan, and he's still really smart and can, manipulate the situation, as needed. But you can sense his annoyance at the very least, and his frustration, as it goes on.
Yeah. There's no question about that. And so then Hans's response is, "Thank you, Mr. Cowboy. I'll take it under advisement."
That's a great line too. It's not like it's something you would quote, but he's so good when he says it. Alan Rickman's a pretty good actor.
He's great when he does that.
Yeah, and he's great as a he's really good as a villain. He's great as Hans.
Yeah. And at this point, McClane, we get a shot of McClane, and he can see that he can't. He realizes that he's lost the battle verbally. There's nothing that he can do or say to stop Hans. So you see him in the room. He starts looking around, trying to find some other solution. And then he sees an office chair. He grabs the office chair. And then I love how he pulls it across the room, lets it roll along in the wheels. And then he takes the bag of explosives and puts it on it. And then the next shot, we see him, we see a fire axe in a, in an enclosed case, on the wall. We see him break the glass and take the fire axe out. So what do you know about fire axes? Or axes in general?
They're sharp. They can be heavy. We used to have one in the Marines to destroy the equipment if we ever got overrun. And my buddy said that he wasn't going to destroy any equipment. He was going to put the axe in people's heads if they came and tried to overrun us. But, that's about all I know.
All right. He probably wouldn't be able to get into too many of them at that point.
No, I know. It was, definitely we had one on a, like, it was like a burn board or something. So it was like, you just destroy stuff to make sure that,
right.
Stuff doesn't fall into the wrong hands if you were ever faced with that. But, I don't do a lot of Paul Bunyan, axe chopping. I will split some wood in my backyard from time to time, like a man's man, for a fire. But other than that, I'm not an axe guy. Not really.
Right. Okay. Well, I never used an axe in my life up until recently. As about a month ago, I was in the States, and mm-hmm. I actually took my 17-year-old son to a place where they let you do axe throwing for an hour.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it was really cool. It was a lot of fun. I think it was like 30, but the place was called Bury the Hatchet.
Mm.
Where they got like tons of them all over the States. We went to a place in New Jersey, and it's $30 a person for an hour, where you just sit there. And so we got like a 5-minute instruction on how to use. They gave us two types of axes. They gave us tomahawks and I'm trying to remember the other one that they gave us. And it's like a hand axe. I'm trying to remember the exact name. There probably is a name for it or whatever.
It's like a hatchet, but there might be something.
Yeah, no, that's the word I was looking for. Okay, so they give us a hatchet and a tomahawk. I think that's what it was. And you got a bullseye and stuff like that. And after we had our 5 minutes of them of the guy, explaining to us, safety and all that stuff, we just had a lot of fun just playing games with it. They gave us like a whole bunch of like options, like 10 different options of different games you can play.
Oh, nice.
You can play like Hangman, and you can play, like the whole idea is that when you hit, what if you miss, if you're with a group of people, so whoever has the lowest number, so you start doing the Hangman for them and stuff like that. It was just a lot of fun. It was something that I was very trepidatious about when it was originally suggested to me to do something like this. But, once I did it, I was like, wow, this was just so much fun. It's not something I'll go do every day, even though they have leagues. Signs. They literally had signs there. People can sign up for axe throwing leagues And
well, it's like darts. It's like darts, you know.
Yeah, it's a little,
so, you know, a little more in depth and a little hard.
A little more intense. Yeah. But
you know, it's kind of like, you know, more manly darts if you want.
Yeah. That's true. So it was a lot of fun. So I recommend to people if you're looking for a fun activity, you know, you can try and find a place like Bury the Hatchet. Maybe they'll, and have a little bit of fun with that type of thing. I think it could also be very addictive for people. So you should be careful with that.
My family went to a Revolutionary Day camp or something like that. So it was like, it was American Revolution stuff. And it was, they did all sorts of demonstrations. And the reason I bring it up is one of the things they did was they had tomahawks and hatchets that you could throw. And my kid was doing that. And he's like a natural, they had the people dressed up. Well, they actually had some natives there, but then they also had some people dressed up like natives, which, you know, may not be okay or not, but they were demonstrating it for him. And then he did it. And it was like, the kid was a natural. I'm like, this, like, of course he was better than me. And he's like a young kid. So, you know, he's not signed up for any leagues. I think he's too young for it, but it was kind of neat to, like, that's exactly what people used to, you know, would do that. That was one, cause they had other games from that era. You know, right. And it was like, that's something people would do. And it was pretty neat.
like in Braveheart, you know, they were throwing rocks.
Rocks.
Isn't that what they were doing? Yeah. It was
like, yep. Yeah. Yeah. There's a place around here that it's a Scottish farm. It's owned by a Scottish family and it's like a farm and they do the Highlander games every year.
Oh,
and they
do
all that stuff from Braveheart. I've always wanted to go because it's like, so my family, I have an Irish family that's McRae. And my grandmother used to tell me, well, actually, we were the MacRae's first, except we backed the wrong Scottish lord and had to flee to Ireland. And I have the DNA evidence to prove that, I have so much Scottish in me, it's not even crazy. But it's funny because that farm in where I live is actually MacRae Farm. And I'm like, I got to go there. You know, these are my people.
Oh, wow. That's really
cool. I've never been. But anyways, that has nothing to do with Die Hard.
Doesn't have to do with Die Hard. We're talking about axes. There you go. And so basically an axe is an implement that's been used for many millennia to shape, split, cut wood to harvest timber. It's sometimes used as a weapon or as a ceremonial or heraldic symbol. Okay. They used to make them out of stone. The heads was made out of stone. And then they started using copper and bronze, iron, and now they mostly use steel to use them. And so I decided to also look up about a fire axe in particular, right? So a fire axe, which is also known as a pickhead axe, it has a pick-shaped pointed pole, which is the area of head opposite the cutting edge. It is often decorated in vivid colors to make it easily visible during an emergency. Its primary use is for breaking down doors and windows or elevator shafts. You know.
Propping them open anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll get there. We'll get there. But no, I mean, I like the fact that we see that it's a red axe. You know, it is something, you know, as they mentioned in this little thing that I just read, you know, that usually they want to make it easier, more visible in situations where you're not going to be thinking straight. You know, like when you've just taken an office chair and put explosives on it, you know, that type of thing.
I would think you're thinking straight then.
Yeah, well, it depends on who. And at this point, he takes the axe and we see him, you know, chop into the elevator door itself. You know, which it always made me wonder why he's doing that. You know, is that the only way he's able to get the door open? By putting an axe through it? I mean, again, this is a steel elevator door. What do you think he's doing? He's like, you know, putting the axe in there so that he can try and pull it open.
I guess. Or, I mean, that's the only thing that makes the most sense. But I thought you'd be able to pull those open, you know, on your own. I swear I've seen other movies where the people just open it, and I'm trying to think if I've ever done that in real life, but maybe because it's maybe is the power out on that level. I'm not sure. So. I don't know if maybe that's why, like, the doors aren't operational, so you really had a wedge in between them to get it, like, enough leverage to open it. I don't know. Right. But I assume that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to, you know, force it to open and then, you know, get some space. And then
I was looking to see him, you know, make a few shots in there, you know, not just one shot. Right. You know, I'd forgotten that there was only one shot. It's not like in Titanic, you know, where take the axe to, you know, to break the handcuffs.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, I like the fact that they at least show us what he's doing with the axe. You know, not completely, but we get an idea of what he's doing with it. And then we go back to Hans, and he gives his order, and he goes, "Fire!" Now, what's really funny is that, you know, he just said 10 seconds earlier, hit it again. So why, you know, besides because we needed it in the plot, you know, like what would be Hans's reasoning to pause for 10 seconds before telling them to fire? He said, hit it again. And then he tells them to fire. You think he's giving them time to load it up, or it's just this is just all because the movie needed it?
Well, I assume it's because the movie needed it, but I think that's maybe why I assumed there was three separate shots. You know what? Like he said, fire, that was meant to be one. And then now we're getting another, like a third, hit it again. But I think you're right. I think it is. The movie needs to, he's telling him to hit it again, meaning probably get ready, but hit it again should just be enough of an order. But maybe it's just to give Hans that, you know, he's such a good, you know, leader, bad guy, you know, and Alan Rickman's such a good presence. Just him saying fire is, I don't know. It's just to show that he's the one in charge and he's the one that, you know, McClane ultimately should be, you know, mad at, you know, and upset with, because he's the giving the orders, I guess.
Yeah, no, I was trying to figure that out also myself. So, yeah, he screams fire. And then, you know, we see the at this point, that's when Alexander makes the second shot. And the angle, just, I don't buy it. I don't buy the angle of where he's shooting. He's on the third floor. He's shooting from three floors up. And, you know, he's pretty much shooting straight down.
Right, right.
You know, I remember when I was in basic training, and, you know, they were teaching us about the M203, you know, mm-hmm. And what they basically said is you cannot shoot it in a straight – you can't shoot it straight. You have to shoot it at an angle. You know, you have to have like a what's it called? The parabolas? I'm trying to remember the right mathematical geometric term here. You know, it's supposed to be – you're supposed to shoot it at an angle so that it can fly at an angle. It doesn't go straight. Right. And I was like, wait a second. But in every movie that I've seen where someone's used it, like in Predator or whatever it is, Predator, they just, all they do is they shoot it and it goes straight. And then, you know, my commander started laughing and he goes, okay, that's why that's a movie. And this is real life. You have to shoot it, you know, so that it has a curve in order to make the shot. So,
right. Yeah, you know, fun fact, actually, the same weapons that they used in Predator were the same weapons they used in Heartbreak Ridge, and they did the same thing in Heartbreak Ridge. They shot straight and blew stuff up. They never, like, angled it up or, you know, like you're supposed to do. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Have you ever shot an M203?
I've shot a couple dummy rounds, and then we actually did it was new at the time. It was a simulated on the computer. Like they had a giant screen. They had a simulated, like a cable running to it. And it knew when you pulled the trigger, and it knew like how you were pointing the weapon, and it would give you like, you would lob up towards like these tanks that were coming at us to see, you know, how close you got to them. But I did a couple dummy, like,
oh wow. Yeah. No, I only shot a few dummy rounds.
Yeah,
I never got to shoot any real ones. A friend of mine always had his weapon. He got the M203, so he was able to. He actually got to shoot the real thing numerous times, you know, during the home training exercises and stuff like that.
Nice.
I was always very jealous of that because I always loved the M203. That was like,
it's awesome.
You know, for me, that would be my weapon of choice. You know, but that's partially because of, you know, Predator and Heartbreak Ridge and all that stuff where they're shooting it directly, you know. But once I learned that you really can't do that,
right,
it's a little bit of a problem. But yeah, so So basically, they make the shot. But again, if you look at it, he's shooting straight down. There's, I don't know. We talked about it on Friday. It was good that it's at least good that James moves out of the way. You know, they don't have him standing behind it where all the, you know, where you have all the what's it called, backwash?
Yeah, the backlash.
Right. And now when he does it, he also breaks another window. Why does he break the window again?
Yeah, I wonder, he's not hitting again. You figured they're well set, but I wonder, were they trying to get a better angle, a different angle, hit a different vehicle? I really don't know.
No, they're hitting the same vehicle that they're doing.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
But the fact that the window shatters, you know, and again, they bolted it to the ground. So it's not as if, you know, he moved to a different position to shoot again. Yeah. He's in the same exact position. So maybe it's just a reused shot that it should have been from the first shot as opposed to the second one. When they edited it in, they changed it. Because I'm trying to remember if on Friday we saw the glass shatter in there. Not really sure. I have a feeling that we didn't. And that probably makes a lot more sense that this is the same shot, you know.
Yeah. Just a continuity mistake. Yeah.
Right. When I look back and I see, oh no, he breaks the glass there also. Wow. So it's the same shot. It's the exact same shot.
That's funny.
It's just from one's a close up and the shot from Friday, it's further away, but the shot today is, that's really funny. He breaks the glass twice. Wow, I didn't even think about that. Even when I was doing my research for this episode, I didn't even think to check that.
Hmm.
Wow. So yeah, there's a continuity error here. But we love continuity errors because it
gives you something to talk about.
Maybe. It gives us, well, not just that. It's just fun to find these little things. You know, whether it makes the movie still interesting to watch. You know, I wouldn't say that it's less interesting that way. And Alexander once again has a direct hit on the RV, and there's tons of smoke and fire coming out of the whole thing here. And then the shot changes, and we see McClane, but we see the shot is from within the elevator shaft, looking up at him, and it's a great shot because it establishes once again, you know, that you have this empty elevator shaft that is very high up.
Right.
You know, and he has where to go with the, you know, when, if he decides to do something with it, who knows? And so at this point, you know, we see that as John is opening up the door, right? And then at this point, I love how he takes the axe and wedges it in between the two doors to keep them open, you know, but we don't see on either of the doors the axe marks, you know, as they say, axe marks the spot, you know, that type of thing. But
is that what they say?
No, I'm just kidding. I was trying to be punny, as they say, but apparently not. I tried. And John like looks down and he goes, "Fuck me." He shouldn't be that surprised. He's already looked down that far before. You know, when he was climbing out of the grate, you know, and was in the shaft. So he saw how far down it goes. You know, back a few weeks ago when he went into the air conditioning unit and stuff like that. So, you know, we counted how many seconds it took for the grate to fall down. I think it was like 7 seconds or something, which means that it was really, really far. So, you know, it's interesting to see that he's surprised once again about how far down it is. You know, that type of thing. And then the shot goes back outside. We see Robinson again. And he goes, "Let's go. Get him out of the car. Don't you know they're burning?" And again, it goes back to the question that I asked earlier. Is he trying to be heroic here, or is he genuinely concerned? You know, like what's, or is he just concerned about what's going to be on the news tomorrow?
You know, all of all of it, but you know, I don't think he's being heroic. Yeah, no. I don't think he's being heroic. I think he's doing what a leader should say, you know, go help them, you know, and I do think he is, again, aware of the optics of everything that's going on. I think he's doing what he thinks he's supposed to do, but it's this particular scene where I'm like, he's not running forward to help. He's literally like, you go do that. And you can almost, I got the impression he was legit scared. Like I thought.
But scared in what way?
Yeah.
Scared that something's that it's going to affect his job.
No, I think he would be scared to go out and also get blasted. So oh, somebody for sure. Go help them. You know, I am legit concerned for these men burning. Go help them. I will not be the one putting myself in danger to do it though. Mm-hmm. That's how I took it, you know, because like he's staying behind that car.
Right.
That's what I think.
Okay. No, that's definitely fair. You know, he's sort of hiding.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make sense. Yeah. And then we get a shot of the RV burning, and then they pan to the left and we see two of the injured SWAT guys, you know, writhing around, screaming in pain. And there's like a third guy who's like trying to help them, you know, maybe try to bandage them up or whatever it is. And at this point, we go back and we get another shot of John, and he puts the explosives directly on the chair. Now we see the C4, you know, that he puts in there. He flips it over. And when he flips over the explosives, then we can see that it says on it C4. You know, so what do you know about C4?
You know, that's, you know, there's such thing as a silly putty. And if there's anything called serious putty, it's going to be C4.
Oh, that's good. I never thought about that one.
Other than that, I know it's explosives. I know that James Bond uses C4 toothpaste to, you know, blow up windows and stuff.
Oh, I think he uses C4 toothpaste to brush his teeth.
No. That's just to smuggle it in and then blow other stuff up. So, yeah, I mean, it's and C4 comes up a lot in movies. I mean, I know it's real, but yeah. Yeah.
Do you know why it comes up so much in movies? Do you have any idea? Like, what would be your reason? I don't know the answer. I'm just trying to think. Why would you think that they use it? Is it because maybe it's a simple form of explosives?
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, it's probably something maybe, you know, I think people at this point are, you know, savvy enough to know that C4 is an explosive. It's not dynamite. You know, it's not, we're not in the old days, you know, where we're doing dynamite in the mines, you know, stuff like that. But also, I imagine they sometimes use that for some of their actual pyrotechnics. I don't know. You know, I'm not a special effects guru or a stunt guy, but maybe this is something that is used in real life for what we see. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I never really put a lot of thought or research into it, honestly, to tell
you.
Well,
that's what I'm here for.
So here we go.
So C4 is composition C4. It's a common variety of plastic explosives known as composition C, which uses RDX as its explosive agent. C4 is composed of explosives, plastic binder, plasticizer, to make it malleable, and usually a marker or odorizing tagant chemical. C4 has a texture similar to modeling clay and can be molded into any desired shape. C4 is metastable and can be detonated only by the shock wave from a detonator or blasting cap. Okay, so I guess that makes a little more sense as to why, you know, you don't have to worry about handling C4. You know, like, right, a lot of times you'll see in movies and TV shows about, you know, people carrying dynamite and you got to be careful. It's going to blow up on you or something like that, you know. But
yeah, nitroglycerin is unstable and it'll, you know, exactly, don't drop it. Yeah.
But apparently C4 is not as volatile from that perspective. You have to worry about C4 was actually, they started creating it in 1956 and they got a patent for it on March 31st, 1958, from the Phillips Petroleum Company.
Hmm.
Okay, and it can't be detonated by a gunshot or by dropping it onto a hard surface. it does not explode when it's set on fire or exposed to microwaves. Detonation can only be initiated by a shockwave, such as when a detonator inserted into it is fired. When detonated, C4 rapidly decomposes to release nitrogen, water, and carbon oxides, as well as other gases. The detonation proceeds at an explosive velocity of 8,092 meters per second, which is 26,550 feet per second. The major advantage of C4 is that it can be easily molded into any desired shape to change the direction of the resulting explosion. C4 has high cutting ability.
Yeah, like you can put them into shapes of little animals and put them underneath the, trying to kill a gopher.
Right. You could try that if you're on a golf course and you're trying to get rid of a gopher. That's a good point. That's true, especially if you look like Bill Murray. And what else do we have here? Terrorist groups quite often use C4. Whether you're dealing with domestic or state terrorism, there are some I guess famous or infamous times that terrorists have used C4. The attack on the USS Cole in October 2000, which killed 17 sailors, they used C4. In 1996, terrorists used C4 to blow up the Cobra Towers in Saudi Arabia. And quite often C4 is used in improvised explosives devices. What are they?
IEDs.
IEDs,
right?
Yeah. By Iraqi insurgents and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about C4 is that it's relatively safe to carry, and that's why a lot of people use it. You know, you don't have to worry about it blowing up on you, as we mentioned earlier, which makes it, I guess, easier or safer to use for anyone. I'm not giving advice to people to what they should use.
Yeah, you don't want the Johnson agents to come track you down.
No,
you
know, no,
because you're
no relation,
no
relation. Yeah, and then we see that there are all these like little metal pins that are scattered around on the side that McLean has, as he puts down the C4, and that's pretty much how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, well, I'm good.
All right, so the script has a few interesting things in it. The first is I like the description of the blast. It says, a blast roars from the third floor window and the shell hits the armored car. The car pitches forward like a beast whose front legs have been shot out from under it, its front axle destroyed, unable to move. Alexander looks back at James and grins. There's also a little bit of extra dialogue between the SWAT commander and the guys who are injured. He goes, Rivers, Rodriguez, report. So in the movie, they don't talk about that at all. They cut out the response that Rivers gives, which says, this is Rivers. We've got one dead. Everybody's hit. Rodriguez is bleeding bad. We've got to get the fuck out of here. So, I mean, it's nice to know that was in the original script, but it doesn't really change much.
No, it's not necessary for the movie.
Right. I mean, well, the one thing that it does is it proves to us that there are fatalities and casualties, but that's it. But you can assume that by the power of the blast that's something that happened. And then it says James opens the box of shells and takes two and starts back across the room. So that's a little strange because we never see him do that. And then when he puts when McLean puts the C4 on the chair. So the description here is like a football. It sits on the seat of a secretary's chair with casters. We pull back to see McLean press three detonators into the top, then cover the explosive with a typewriter, tying it securely in place with electrical cords. And then it says that he opens the door with a fire axe and he looks in and the top of the car can just be seen 35 floors below. So I'm not even going to go into detail as to that. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, about the fact that of what he can see. You know, they never show it to us in the movie itself, but I like the fact that it's in here. Every Monday, we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger movies. So what have you got for us, Brian? Start with your number five and work your way up.
All right. Well, number five would be Invasion USA with Chuck Norris.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not like he's not in one location. He's pretty much on the USA, but there is a pretty good scene where he busts into a mall that was taken over by the terrorists, and it's pretty much him taking all of them out in the mall. So, you know, it's definitely got a Die Hard tone to it.
Okay.
And in no particular order of my, you know, for my 2-3 or my 4-3 and 2, I should say, if I'm going in reverse order, I really like those Olympus Has Fallen series, or London Has Fallen, or Angel Has Fallen with Gerard Butler and Morgan Freeman and Aaron Eckhart. They're all pretty much three of the same movies. I think Olympus Has Fallen was the first one.
Yes. Where the first one was Olympus. And the second one was London, and the third one was Angel.
Yep. And I think I like the, you know, the fact that they were in the White House, because that's more of a Die Hard ripoff, because they're in one location for most of that. So that would probably be my number two. And then, you know, but again, they're all pretty much the same movie. I just really like them. they're definitely, and Gerard Butler's good for those type of things. But probably my number one.
Well, one second. I'm giving points for each of them, so you got to tell me which one you want.
All right, so I'll do it. So this is how I had it. Angel Has Fallen is number four.
Okay.
London Has Fallen is number three, and Olympus Has Fallen would be number two.
So in other words, what you're saying here is that as the movies went on, they were less and less.
Yeah, they were just interesting. I mean, they tried to be broader and bigger, but I like the original conceit of they even did White House Down at around the same time. And
yeah, they both came out in 2013.
I don't even know if I've actually. I must have seen it, but I like Olympus Has Fallen better. But
I agree. I like it so much better. I recently rewatched it like a month and a half ago. And I really enjoyed it again.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I don't. And, London and Angel, I didn't like as much. They weren't as fun.
I like them, but you know, I like that stuff. But yeah, it's less and less each time. But I can still watch them. You know.
Okay, that's fair.
And then my number one is Under Siege. I really like that one.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, Navy SEAL on a boat, taking out a bunch of terrorists and traitors. What's not
to
love?
Is that a problem for a Marine to like a movie about Navy SEALs?
Nah, it's fine. They're okay in their own right.
All right,
it's a fun
fair.
Movie. And, yeah,
that's
it, it's one of Seagal's better movies too. You know,
it's my favorite Seagal movie for sure.
I think so too. I mean, I like Hard to Kill. It's stupid, but I like it. But yeah, Under Siege is probably his best.
Yeah, I think I also like the fact it was the first time that they actually made him cut his hair.
Yeah.
You know, so you got rid of that stupid ponytail.
The ponytail, yeah. Yep. That's my list.
All right, great, excellent. So you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm currently doing a podcast with my daughter, and it's called Hamilton Shot by Shot, where we go through song by song of the musical Hamilton, and that can be found at Hamilton Shot by Shot on Facebook and Instagram, and then Hamilton_SBS on Twitter.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, which is movierobminute.com. So, Brian, you feel like coming back again tomorrow and seeing if the quarterback is still is toasted enough, or maybe we need to toast him a little more?
Oh, you know it. I'm coming back.
All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.